The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Oh, it's 3 o'clock.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, I know the Texans and this play calling. I know every game it's something else. Why'd he run it here? Why'd he throw it so much? Why'd he do this? This week it is the Texans' quick screens to the wide receivers. That's the one scheme play calling issue that everybody has with Bobby Slowick this week. There were four wide receiver screens in this game, and they all, I believe all of them, went for a negative gain, if you will. Is there such a thing as a negative gain?
There were no positive plays of the four.
There you go. And I'm going to run down it real quick. If you want, I just follow me on Twitter, at Clint Sterner. And I gave a breakdown. On one post, I posted the video of all four screens, and I gave a breakdown of each one of them. And the call is not the problem. The call is not the problem. Not Bobby Slowick is not the problem. The call is not the problem. The first screen to the right, to Nico Collins, the throw is the problem. The ball is high and on the back shoulder. The receiver has to jump and catch the ball. And when he's jumping to catch the ball, he should be putting his right foot in the ground and cutting inside of Hutch's block or the attempted block. And it is a huge gain. When you look at how the defense played that particular formation, there's one guy making the play. And if he doesn't make that play, we're talking 10, 15, 20 yard. And that's if the safety comes down and can tackle Nico Collins in the open field. Love the call. I don't like the design because the DB's already outside because of alignment, and so you're swinging a bubble screen type motion. Nico's going to the sideline. The DB's already outside the wide receiver that's blocking him, so you're just giving him a clear path. I don't like the design. I don't like the effort by Xavier Hutchinson either. Hutch has to be better. Then there is that's the first screen. The second screen is a play action screen, and the timing is all screwed up, right? This goes to me, this is a team that hadn't practiced it enough. This is a team that it's not coached well enough. Whether that's Bobby Slowick or anybody on the staff below him, the timing sucks. It's way out of whack. It doesn't make sense. And the timing is what ends up screwing up this particular call. I'm not sure, by the way, this is a problem that in the screen game blows my mind anyway. I'm not sure why in this particular screen Woods isn't blocking the most dangerous man in this situation. It's poorly executed. It's poorly designed. The timing sucks. And it goes for no game.
Can I stop you really quick?
Yes.
You mean you don't like the design of having Laramie Tunsil dive down to the right and then try and they try to go back out. You don't like that design?
Get back out there. It's the same one where he was down the field on, by the way, on the 78 yard or whatever touchdown that that Nico got called back earlier in the season. You know, the next one is a screen to Robert Woods. Don't like that thought in general. But again, I don't know why, in this case, Irv Smith isn't blocking the most dangerous man, letting Woods catch the ball, and then have a big, stiff linebacker in space trying to make the tackle. Instead, he just lets the DB go. He goes and blocks the linebacker. Woods has no chance. Not sure why it's being executed that way. It makes no sense whatsoever. Like, most dangerous man in the screen game, that usually trumps all rules. You know what I mean? Like, if somebody's kind of like pass protecting. If I'm responsible for the linebacker, but he's 6 yards deep, and I pass set, and all of a sudden I see a D tackle come screaming on a loop, I'm going to hit his ass, right? I mean, he's the closest guy to my quarterback. I'm going to hit him. Like, screen game, most dangerous man, it has to be a part of this, and it clearly is not on any of these screens. And then the last screen was the same exact screen as the first one. Love the call. Not so in love with the design. Again, you're bubbling away from your help with the DB sitting outside by alignment. And in this one, again, the DB is just – the DB wants to make the play more than Hutchinson wants to make the block. Quite just how it is. I mean, which this team runs into this problem a lot of the times. Spo, is the other team is more physical than you are. Not when we're dealing with our defense, when we're dealing with our offense, that happens a lot. And it was on Front Street in the screen game. There was two of the four screens. I absolutely love the call. I can see why you're doing it. Don't like the design, don't like the execution, but I love the call. I got it. Two of them, I'm not in love with the call, and I'm damn sure not in love with the execution. But at the end of the day, if you had guys that were selling out, if you had guys that were blocking most dangerous man instead of being robots and blocking the safety 15 yards deep, they would have been productive plays.
Yeah, I look at it, and there have been times where they've run these plays, and it's been Mechie who's the blocker. That's not going to work. Like, the idea that you're going to put Mechie in that position, it just doesn't work. I don't know. Do they have a receiver that you feel like you can trust to make that block in that spot? Or do you just have to throw that out of the playbook altogether?
Well, here's the interesting thing is that Hutch would be the guy. He's a bigger receiver. Mm-hmm. If you're not going to throw it to Nico, how about we use Nico in that situation? But, hell, they used the tight end. The tight end goes out there and doesn't block most dangerous man. Instead, he goes to the linebacker that's 5 or 6 yards deep. And so the DB, more fleet of foot DB, goes and makes a tackle. Robert Woods doesn't have a chance. So, I mean, they can try. This is kind of like the offensive line to me. Like, there is just a lack of physicality. Like, nobody dislikes physicality and contact more than Dalton Schultz. But it seems like it happens quite a bit. Now, I'll take it one step further. The counter punches off of those wide receiver quick screens, they faked it one time and threw a running back screen to Mixon. I think it went for a chunk, the explosive, yeah. I think. Mm-hmm. So that was a really good one. And then the other counter punch was the same formation, and Hutch stalks like he's going to block, and then he runs a quick slant, and it's there, and I don't know why CJ didn't throw it. Again, poorly designed because Mixon is at that side, and Mixon's linebacker could have potentially been in his window. Don't know why you would have a running back running a route underneath the slant right there like that. That was poorly executed as well. But it was there, and it would have been for a first down. Instead, he throws it away. We punt. So the counter punches were there. A couple of the screens should have been significantly better. But I do believe if you're going to have a problem with Bobby, it's not calling him. It is the design. This is and Bobby's responsible for all of it. The design, playing, play designs, the plan design, as well as calling plays and the timing of calling plays. This was not a play call problem. To me, this was a play design problem with a lack of physicality issue for the offense.
To me, it feels like you're coming from a system in San Francisco where you've just had physicality all across those playmakers, whether it's Debo Samuel or George Kittle or all those guys. They wanted to go out and hit people, and it just doesn't seem like the Texans guys want to do that. And the other thing that has stood out, and it wasn't as big on Saturday, but it doesn't seem like CJ is that accurate with a lot of these passes. It doesn't seem like that he makes the throw in the right spot. Like, the whoever he's throwing it to, whether it be Nico or somebody else, they've got to reach back for the ball, or they've got to go low for the ball. And then that basically takes them out of the play right there.
Well, that's definitely the case on the first screen where the location of the throw actually is what kept the play from being successful, and it would have been a big play had it worked out. But somebody on the text line here from the 281, the screen calls are the problem. If they can't design or execute one correctly, then why the hell are you running four of them? Now, look, I don't disagree. If it's just a, hey, they're not working, let's move on. I'm just telling you, I can see where you're watching it. You've got the numbers. We're talking about NFL players here. If you can't execute that play, then, I mean, there's only so much you can do. You know, you can call double slant and the inside slant's wide ass open and your quarterback holds the ball and throws a pick to the guy that was pressed from jump. Why do you call that play? Right? I mean, these guys are pros, man. These guys have been around plenty of time and repped. These are very, very basic rules. They've been doing this stuff since they were in Little League and can't execute those problems. You know, guys, this is one question that we got quite a bit on the postgame show Saturday night was, you know, who are we? Like, where are we? As it pertains, the Chiefs are over there figuring out, hey, man, if we get the ball back in the fourth quarter with 5 minutes on the clock, what are we going to do to put a knee in it? If we get you know, a 3-point lead or a 7-point lead or a double digit lead, what plays are we going to run? If we get an important 3rd and 8 or 3rd and 10, we got 2 or 3 plays that they ain't seen yet that we got in the holster, and we're going to run. We're still figuring out how to block a damn bubble screen. You know what I mean? Like that is who the Texans are offensively. They lack physicality. Just flat ass, that they lack physicality to the point of where when somebody is physical, you're like, whoa, that was good. That was a great block. Like, I'm in love with Irv Smith right now. Is he perfect? No. Right? But you watch Irv Smith plays the game, damn it. When he hits somebody, when he leads up in the hole, his head is over his toes. He is leaning forward. And he's trying to hit somebody. He ain't got arms wide open like he's bear hugging his mom. I mean, there's a problem with this football team. I don't know, Spo, if it's coaching or inability to take the coaching. I don't know. I'm not there every day. But there is for some reason, this offensive football team they struggle doing the basic crap. Like, if you'd have told me 2 years into this thing, and D'Amico Ryan's coach football team with an offensive coordinator that came out of San Francisco, one of the most physical bunches on the offensive side of the football in the game, with the exception of maybe Baltimore, if you'd have told me that we would still be, like, if I were Bobby and D'Amico, I'd be embarrassed of the lack of physicality, the lack of just want to, like, just softness in certain situations. Like, if you'd have told me, hey, man, we're going to be 2 years into this thing, and we're still going to be out there patty caking trying to block DBs. I'd have called you a bold-faced liar. You know what I mean? Like, that's who this team is. Right now, your offense is still trying to do the basic football 101 things, and we, for some reason this year at times, have thought that they are in the same category of teams that have an identity, impose their will on people, and literally work at 5 different situations, 5 different plays in a game that they know is going to make a difference.
Well, we thought this would be a top 5 offense when the season started.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's going to be closer to a bottom 5 offense than it is to a top 5 offense. Here's my issue. You talked about they ran 4 wide receiver screens.
Yeah.
All 4 were unsuccessful.
Mm-hmm.
They run 1 running back screen. It was successful. Why aren't they running 4 running back screens instead of doing the 4 wide receiver screens?
You will never get any pushback from me, Spo, when it comes to like the lack of using Joe Mixon in the past, whether it's screen game or him catching the ball in the backfield on the little H post routes that you see all these backs catching out of the backfield, just little Texas routes, boom over the middle, or line him up and run a slant. Why we don't see those again, very basic things with a back that we were told Joe Mixon is in terms of a guy that can do it all. I don't know why we didn't see more jet sweep motions with Tank Dell since just this week before he got injured. I don't think we saw it once, like a legit threat. Like, why we don't see those simple things done at like a crazy good level blows my mind. I thought that was at the very least what we would have.
And we brought this up at the very beginning of the show, how Bobby Slowick said today that they've got that, you know, obviously the playbook is going to change based off of availability of certain players, but they have their plays that they can go to whenever they need 5 yards or, you know, whenever they need a play.
Right.
And I sat here and I asked you, and I've asked you a couple times, like, what are those plays? Because I don't know what they are. And
dang it, Bobby.
That showed up to me, that Detroit game, the last drive of the Detroit game. They have a 3rd and 4. They call a timeout. Mm-hmm. They have time to set something up. And what happens? The first option is taken away, and they've got nothing. And yep. CJ's got to kind of run around to try and make a play, throws an incomplete pass. Detroit gets the ball. They're in a 3rd and 6. Call timeout. And they get the ball to their best player in stride, just boom. Yeah. Yep. Why is it that Detroit can do that and the Texans just have no chance? That's when I learned that there was such a huge difference between those two teams.
Yeah, well, there is, again, you bring up a team that is just, I mean, they're focusing on how do they get Amon-Ra St. Brown the ball in critical moments. You know what I mean? How do they, that's what they're focused, that's what they're working all week on. Mm-hmm. They're not working on how do I protect the quarterback. You know what I mean? They're not working on how do I block for a screen. I mean, they're working, okay, we'll have 5 to 10 plays offensively in critical situations where we got to figure out a way. How are we going to get St. Brown or Laporta? How are we going to get these guys the ball? Right? Or we're going to turn around and we're going to act like we stumble. I still think my play against Tennessee, my fumble against Tennessee, maybe inspired the Detroit Lions this week. We're going to turn around and we're going to hard play action. The running back's going to fall down. The quarterback's going to act like he's going to fall down. And he's going to stand up and throw a touchdown to Laporta behind the defense. Right? I mean, that's what those guys are doing. And we're just not there yet. So hopefully we'll get there. And hopefully we got a short time to get there. And hopefully it'll happen. Christmas Day. Be a hell of a Christmas present, wouldn't it? All right, the college football playoff weekend was hyped as one of the best sports weekends ever, if I remember correctly. Was it a buzzkill for you, or did you actually enjoy it, given the fact that it was several blowouts? My man Spo, I ain't going to tell you where, but he was freezing his ass off in one of them stadiums. We'll cuss and discuss next right here on Sports Radio 610.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Ron Hughley is out. Adam Spolane is in. We are rocking and rolling. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to everybody out there, man. We are right around the corner. It's Christmas Eve, if you will. And this time of year, I get a little giddy. I ain't going to lie to you, man. This means I get to spend some time around my family. We obviously get to watch tremendous football at the NFL level and kind of watch how things unfold for all these teams across the entire NFL. And we get to catch some really, really good football and some not so good football. Watch a couple bowl games right now, I believe, as I'm assuming this is live up on the TVs bouncing around here, but there's always live action going on this time of year. So I'm here for it. And speaking of live action, Saturday was, and you know, we throw Friday in there with your guys, Spo. But this weekend, let's say that was kind of tabbed as one of the best sports weekends ever, possibly with the expanded college football playoffs having a game Friday night and 3 games on Saturday. Obviously, with the Texans and the Chiefs and the Ravens and the Steelers on Saturday before having obviously your Sunday slate of games Monday tonight, and then obviously turn around and you got Christmas Day games as well. Where are you boys at with what y'all watched this weekend? Let's start with you, Spo, because I know you being a Hoosier, you went up there and you caught the Notre Dame Indiana game yourself, and just your thoughts on how that game unfolded.
Well, it wasn't great. Could have been better.
I promise I didn't mean that to be that come across that bad.
You know, it could have been better. You know, it would have been nice if we could have punched the ball in the end zone before I walked out of the stadium when it was 23 degrees or whatever it was. But it was a great environment to be in. And one of the things that I really enjoy, and listen, the games were bad. Like, yeah, let's be honest. Indiana Notre Dame was the closest of the three just in terms of final margin. Clemson, Texas was the better game that weekend. But I loved having the games on campus. I think it added a different dimension. It added just an intensity to the crowd that you don't see in these bowl games when it might be a 50-50 split with the crowd and half the people that are there don't really care because they might be from whatever town, you know, the game is being played in.
Yes, yeah.
So I thought that having the game at Notre Dame Stadium was great. I thought that having, you know, playing a game in Austin, playing a game in State College, playing a game in Columbus, I thought that was just a really cool aspect of it.
Oh, I thought it was killer, man. Two game days, Which, by the way, with Saban and Pat McAfee, I'm in, man. That is just phenomenal TV. I've never been a big, hey, I got to sit down and watch College Game Day all morning long. But it was fun to have two of those. And then the most beautiful thing of it is, as you mentioned, home games on college campuses in late December, mid to late December is absolutely in the north. Yeah, I mean, you get all of it. You had 60 degree in Austin, and you had snow up at Notre Dame. So I looked at this was beautiful. It couldn't have worked out any better in terms of the venues. Again, Notre Dame, Penn State, Texas, and Ohio State all having home games. And I think the big topic here, guys, is SMU and Indiana. SMU and Indiana are the two teams, at least in this first round, because you're going to see Boise and Arizona State in the second round, that are lower tier teams or haven't yet arrived teams that have to prove something. But SMU and Indiana, there's a lot of chatter about, boy, well, we just want to see the best football teams compete for a national title. Clearly, SMU and Indiana didn't belong. And, you know, I think in hindsight, it's easy to go there. I think the we want to see the best 12 teams compete, I think is a pissy poor way to look at it. To me, the beauty of a 12 team playoff is that you are going to have teams, whether it be SMU who got lucky and the first year they jumped into the ACC was down, and you were able to run through it undefeated, right? Indiana, I mean, you get a new coach, they get hot, the schedule's forgiving. You really haven't been tested to this degree, with the exception of one game, and you lost that game. But to me, that's what it's all about. It's why you expand the playoffs. Spo, for me, like, this is like, You can't have committees making the decision of, oh, SMU's SMU. Mm-hmm. That's not a big brand. It don't matter if they go 8-0 in the ACC.
They play in the ACC.
To hell with
yeah.
it, right? Oh, Indiana, it's the first year. Their schedule wasn't hard enough. We know the beauty of the playoffs is the fact that you're going to get a group of five, what used to be a group of five, I don't know what to call them anymore, Boise State. You're going to get Arizona State not just getting in, but getting hot at the right time, winning their conference, and getting a damn bye. You're gonna get SMU, who proved that they didn't belong, but they earned the right to have the opportunity to prove it. And to me, that is precisely why I'm stoked about a 12 team playoff. Here's the deal: next year, Spo, I'm all for the betterment of the game. Next year, every Division I college football player and coach is gonna wake up and go to training camp and know if we just handle our business, we can get in the dance.
Can I point something out?
Oh, yeah.
We have breaking news that we need to get to on the Texans.
Well,
but I want to point something out really quick, because you brought up how SMU and Indiana were kind of the teams that maybe didn't belong. I do want to point out, at the end of the first quarter, Indiana was leading in Ohio State. Indiana was leading at Ohio State after the first quarter. Tennessee was down 21-0. So Indiana played Ohio State much. Yeah, that's what I meant. The Indiana played Ohio State.
I thought you were making a pick six joke.
No,
for SMU.
No, Indiana played Ohio State much, much better than Tennessee did. So shouldn't Tennessee be brought?
Oh,
to this
look,
conversation about
hey, Spo, you can look at it across the board. I mean, all four of these teams, Clemson performed. They competed better than anybody.
And Clemson won their conference too. So Clemson gets in,
but they didn't get into the damn championship game until like week 12
They needed some help.
Right, they needed some help.
They got help from
Miami. Right. They were the one that needed help from Miami. Right. So like, you can look at every one of these games and say, we could have picked Bama or South Carolina or Miami, and we may have gotten a better game. Truthfully,
they didn't earn it.
But they didn't earn it.
Yeah.
Right. I'm just.
Don't lose three games.
I've had a lot of these college conversations, man. I've always hate the, especially in hindsight, we just want the best college football teams. Hey, man, come on. This is absolutely beautiful, man. And I just hope that SMU and Indiana losing the way they did isn't viewed differently than Texas. I mean, than Tennessee and really Clemson for that matter. And I hope that SMU's in Indiana in the future aren't booted. I bet it happens, but I hope it does. All right, we got breaking news with the Houston Texans, and I'm gonna make your ass hang on, Tyler. Don't you hit that button? I'm gonna make you hang on, baby.
I'm not hitting it yet. They gotta wait. Drive family, you better wait.
Come on, baby. We got good news, Houston. Stay right there, baby. We're gonna give you a little breaking news.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios. Here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. Sports Radio 610. Houston Texans breaking news.
There's that breaking news that they've been waiting on. T, what you got, man?
Yes, sir. This is being reported by multiple sources. Sources say that with Tank Dell out, the Houston Texans have claimed former Ravens wide receiver Diontae Johnson on waivers. So what you wanted, Clint, what you called for, Dirty Red, it has happened. Diontae Johnson is now with the Texans.
This is a guy that, now I don't know if it's saying much, but this is a guy that earlier this year was expected to be the number one receiver in Carolina. This was a guy that was expected to be with Bryce Young and help lead the way with Bryce Young. Some of the stuff I'm reading, elite route runner, and has been a really, really, really good player. Like shown a lot more upside than maybe he has played too consistently. But this is an extremely talented wide receiver that the Texans are very fortunate to be able to claim on waivers, given Stephon Diggs is out, Tank Dell is out, and you need veteran, explosive, proven players that can step in at some point and help this football team hopefully make a run in the playoffs. I think this is a 2 weeks from now type of sign. This is a can we get him ready and have him fully rocking and rolling for week one in the playoffs, NRG Stadium, and he gives C.J. Stroud an option. I think it's more so of a move than that. Now, we'll probably see him before that, but I think that is the end game here with Diontae Johnson is we see him in the playoffs and potentially helping this football team. I don't know. Obviously not going to play Wednesday, get his feet wet against the Titans, and then be ready to rock and roll in the playoffs for the Texans. But this is definitely a big-time upgrade at the number two position based on what they were looking at with this Tank Dell injury.
Well, you asked me at the start of the show, you asked me and Tyler, like, do you have faith in the Texans skill position guys without Tank Dell? And I think we both said no. And I do think that this is somebody who is an upgrade just in terms of talent. This guy who was a Pro Bowler in 2021, 86 catches in 2022. He's had productive years in the NFL. And, you know, it's been a weird year for him. Got off to a slow start when Bryce Young was the quarterback in Carolina, but had back-to-back really good games once Andy Dalton took over at quarterback. He got traded really for nothing to Baltimore, and really for whatever reason made no sort of an impact with the Ravens. He had one catch in four games with Baltimore, only got targeted five times. But again, when you look at what the Texans have in that wide receiver room, it's not much after all the injuries. So this is an upgrade in terms of talent. Again, it's not easy coming in week 16 and trying to make an impact on a new team, but it's worth a shot. It's absolutely worth a shot.
Yeah, no, it is. Look, I mean, we've heard Bobby Slowick, and hell, we've watched it offensively. I mean, they are back to the basics, and they're as vanilla as you could possibly be. It's not like they're doing a bunch of exotic motions and formations and routes. I mean, so he should be able to be plugged into this offense rather quickly, and he is without a doubt Nico's number two. And so the only problem here is this news breaks. Diontae Johnson's claimed off of waivers by the Houston Texans. The only complaint is he left Pittsburgh and it wasn't necessarily with warm and fuzzies.
No.
Right? Got traded from Carolina, which is a dysfunctional organization that has very little in the wide receiver room. You've really got to do something for them to want to get rid of you, right? Or not be a good fit for a rebuilding franchise and a young quarterback, right? And then you go to Baltimore, and as you mentioned, reputation-wise, Baltimore is one of the more well-ran organizations, more well-respected organizations. To not fit in there and ultimately get placed on waivers after refusing to go in the game like literally in the middle of a game, and the cat out, the linebacker out in San Francisco is taking a ton of heat right now for it, but Deontay Johnson apparently did it as well in Baltimore. Now, I don't have all the details, but the only concern is with Deontay Johnson, the only thing that makes you pause just briefly is that little bit of a history. Clearly, this is doesn't appear to be a guy, at first glance, doesn't appear to be a guy that D'Amico Ryans wants to bring in this building. Doesn't appear to be a guy that Nick Caserio is looking to bring in this building and add to this roster. Now, the Texans are obviously in a rough spot at the wide receiver position. And I believe they built a culture and a foundation here that allows them to bring any and everybody in here that they want to on a limited time basis. And this is one of those situations of Deontay Johnson could potentially be a huge plus. Not just, hey, this guy give you a little depth. This guy could potentially be a huge plus once the playoffs start for the Houston Texans.
And it's a no-risk move. When you look at what they're left with right now after the Diggs injury, after the Dell injury, there's no reason not to try it. And if it works, great. It's a huge bonus. If it doesn't work, then you can move on. And it's like it never happened. It's a 2-3 week type of a rental type deal.
Yeah.
He gets an opportunity to prove himself. And I do wonder, I know you don't think he's going to play Wednesday. I wonder if maybe, just maybe he's in there against his old team. Or obviously doesn't love those guys after the way it ended. And just getting him on the field with C.J. Stroud, I think is important, especially when you get into the last game of the season, when you get into the wild card game. I think that you want as many reps with those two together as you can possibly get, because you're probably not going to get it on the practice field. Like, let's be honest, the Texans are just having a walkthrough tomorrow. They're probably going to take it easy here in the days after this Baltimore game. So you're not going to have a lot of chances, especially in a game situation. Like, do we think that C.J. Stroud is even going to play week 18 against Tennessee? So that's why I do think that you want to get these two on the field together, at least as soon as you can.
Well, you make a great point. I mean, even whether he's going to play or not against Tennessee, you make a great point of how important the reps actually are. You're not getting full speed rep at practice, obviously. Mm-hmm. If you want full speed reps, that you're going to have a chance to get some Wednesday. It would benefit him greatly, obviously, to play against the Titans, even if it is Davis Mills, to get in there and get accustomed to the offense and things of that nature. So, this is exciting news. Deontay Johnson, wide receiver. Many folks thought that he would get claimed well before the Texans got their turn, but he didn't. He slipped to the Texans, which I don't even know right now where the Texans would be in that claiming process. I would say, they got to be middle of the pack, right?
See, they are, because the Chargers were a team that were expected to possibly be, in the mix for...
Yeah, and just so people know, like the way the claiming process works is the worst team gets first dibs, and it works its way all the way up to the Kansas City Chiefs. And so I'm going to guess the Texans are 15, 16, 17, somewhere near.
No, they're further down, but they're 9-6. There's a big cluster of teams that are 9-6, including the Chargers. So I wonder, just in terms of tiebreakers, if maybe they were ahead
of the Chargers,
for whatever reason. I don't know what the, I don't have the order, the waiver order, but yeah, both teams are 9-6. And you look at a lot of these other teams that were further below the Texans in terms of record, they don't really need Deontay Johnson right now. You know, they're not looking at a playoff run. They're probably not looking to add him to their wide receiver room, whereas the Texans clearly haven't had a need.
Well, and I said this before, guys, even if Deontay Johnson and the recent history here with him, even if it is real and it has legs and he's been a problem everywhere he goes, the best remedy for that, right, is to be wanted. The best remedy for that is to be needed. And there's no doubt about it, the Texans are going to welcome him with open arms. The Texans are going to see how quickly they can get him on the field, how quickly can they get the football in his hands, and how quickly can he help impact this team. It's not going to be wait in the wings and let Xavier Hutchinson and John Metchie and Wayne and all these other guys get reps. I would imagine this is a get in here. How quickly can you become the number two for Nico Collins? And that is the cure, the remedy for a lot of headaches Sometimes a guy's not built for a rebuilding organization like Carolina. Sometimes a guy's not built to sit behind Rashad Bateman and all these guys that are in Baltimore and have been in that system, and he was having to wait behind and take turns with. Some guys aren't built for that. You get into an organization where, hey, man, you shape up or you ship out, number one. Number two, we need you as much as you need us. Let's get this thing rolling. That could be a beautiful, beautiful thing for the Texans, and it could be a beautiful thing for Deontay Johnson. I'm excited to see what comes of this. And it could be absolutely beautiful. All right, the it is not a tape drop Tuesday. It is a what'd you make of it Monday? How about that? How about that right there?
It works. I like it.
What'd you make of it Monday, baby? C.J. Stroud's interceptions. C.J. Stroud's overall performance. What'd you think of it? We'll cuss and discuss next right here on Sports Radio.
Hey, y'all. It's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Radio 610.